You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. This is me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Mompos, Bolivar, Colombia. That's 5 hours south of Cartagena in Colombia's Caribbean region. And this is episode 359 of the Columbia Calling podcast. We've had some great episodes already this year. That's the abortion laws in Colombia with Amy Booth talking to us from Argentina. And of course, episode 357 with Gabriel Torres and Gwen Prevost, talking about mapping the hiking trails in Colombia's Chicamocha Canyon. So people have found those very interesting and they've been very popular indeed. I want to cast your mind back to as far as episode 345. That's when Vincent Pollard, the mixologist with experience from Canada and the UK, who's now here in Colombia, that's when he joined us to talk about his gin that he's making with a team, and it's called Selva Gin. Well, I have in my position here beside the microphone a bottle of Selva Gin, and let me tell you, this stuff is special. Do to check it out when you can. It's coming up on sale in Colombia very soon. The botanicals that have been placed in there add a certain something. It's special. I've been enjoying this bottle. My family's been enjoying it, but I tell you what, it's mainly me that's been enjoying it, and I'm not really even a gin drinker, and this has appealed to me here in the tropics. A nice, very flavorsome gin and tonic has been just what's needed when the power has gone out during the daytime here in Mompos. It's taken the edge off. So thank you again to Vincent Pollard, and of course, revisit episode 345 to hear about his project, Selva Gin. Now, I have to cast back one further episode, that's 344, when we talked to the CEO and director and founder of Chiron Life Sciences. That's the company pioneers in medical cannabis in Colombia. That was Alvaro Torres who joined us. Well, we've got him back on the show this week. That's always great to have people back on the show. But this week, for episode 359, he is accompanied by none other than Juan Carlos Echeverri, the former Minister of Economy here in Colombia, underneath in the tenure of President Juan Manuel Santos. I will be obviously reading out his CV in segment 3 of the show, and it's quite incredible. So it's amazing to have an economist of such high stature on this show. And we'll be talking a little bit about, obviously, the medicinal cannabis market, but also legalization and how can we push the Colombian economy back into some sort of recovery? And I'll put a final question to him at the end of whether he's planning to run for the Conservative Party in the presidential elections in 2022. So quite exciting indeed, this show. Next week, my wife Alba's coming on, and it's going to be like the roast of Richard McCall, where she lays into me for the better part of 35 minutes. And then after that, we'll be talking to Tom Gatehouse, an episode 361, about the book on mining practices here in Latin America, and it's being published by the Latin American Bureau next year. So thank you so much again for listening. I'll leave you now in the capable hands of Emily Hart, and then we'll be back in segment 3 with Alvaro Torres and Juan Carlos Echeverri. Thank you and bye-bye.
I'm Emily Hart, and this is the news for Columbia Calling for the week of January 18th, 2021. Just more than 1 week into the year, Colombia saw its first murder of an environmental defender in the Department of Tolima. Gonzalo Cardona Molina had dedicated 20 years of his life to the conservation of the yellow-eared parrot, an endangered species whose protection he led in the face of threats from criminal groups. On January 15th, Fredman Eraso Padilla was murdered in Cordoba. He was a cultural activist and social leader who fought for the rights of Afro-descendant communities in Colombia. Eraso's murder brings to 8 the number of leaders and human rights defenders killed already this year. Last year saw the highest number of human rights defenders and community leaders assassinated since 2011, with 310 murdered. An 11-year-old activist, Francisco Javier Vera, known as the Latin American answer to Greta Thunberg, received threatening messages online after asking the government to guarantee internet connection for children taking virtual classes due to the pandemic. The threats have been universally condemned and he has been offered protection by various government agencies. The murders of two girls, one of 11 years old in Cauca and one of 4 years old in Caldas, have highlighted the alarming extent of violence against women and girls in Colombia. In 2020, there were at least 227 cases of femicide, 33 of those against girls and adolescents. In the first fortnight of 2021, there have already been 16 cases of femicide, 7 of them children. In the wake of Twitter's suspension of US President Donald Trump's account, Colombia's police requested the closure of social media accounts belonging to dissident FARC leaders Iván Márquez and Jesús Santrich, as well as the Segunda Marquetalia guerrilla dissidents. Police made the request on the grounds of drug trafficking and intent to incite terrorism. Twitter responded by suspending those accounts, though Facebook and YouTube have yet to respond. In coronavirus news, cases continue to climb as the second wave takes hold of Colombia. Last week saw an average of 17,000 new cases daily, with around 350 deaths. Colombia has now had 1.9 million cases, with 48,000 killed by the virus, and an estimated 125,000 cases currently active in a population of 50 million. The British strain of the virus has yet to be detected in Colombia, though ICUs are at 90% capacity in Antioquia and Bogota, and over 80% in cities across the country. Measures including quarantines and curfews continue to be rolled out at a local level. After widespread criticism over the lack of clear planning and transparency around contracts, President Duque presented his plan for the distribution of the vaccine, though it is still in its draft stages. Countries globally and regionally, including Mexico, Chile and Argentina, have already begun their vaccination programs. The Colombian government say they plan to start vaccinations in February and intend to vaccinate 70% of the population, moving in stages, taking age, comorbidities and medical work into account. Enough vaccine for 29 million people has reportedly been bought, a combination of Pfizer, Oxford AstraZeneca and Janssen. The first freezers have also now arrived in the country, necessary to store the Pfizer vaccine, which needs to be kept at minus 70 degrees centigrade. Citizens can apply to their medical care provider to receive the vaccine, though the provider must confirm that the person is eligible before delivering it. Medical insurance companies are calling for the vaccine to be obligatory, given that more than 40% of Colombians are considering not being vaccinated, according to a recent study by Dane. Controversially, the decree will also allow cities to buy additional vaccine. Cities including Cali have already begun to move forward, while the National Association of Capital Cities rejected the idea, saying the vaccine should be organised centrally by the national government. The decree also states that as soon as the first phase of the vaccine is completed, those over 80 and particularly vulnerable, private companies will be able to negotiate directly with pharmaceutical companies to market the vaccine in the country. This would make it possible to buy the vaccine regardless of vulnerability or demographic. The president has also appealed to the international community for assistance in vaccinating undocumented migrants from Venezuela, whom he previously said he did not plan to vaccinate. That was this week's newscast. Now back to Columbia Calling with Richard McCall.
And we're back. This is the Columbia Calling podcast, episode 359. I'm here in Mompox, Bolívar. My very special guests are in Bogota and Villeta. So we have another three-person interview this week. It's a big interview because not only are we having Álvaro Torres back on the show, you'll remember Álvaro from last year. He's the chief executive officer and director of Chiron Life Sciences. A little bit about Álvaro, just to remind you. He has over 15 years of experience in the Latin American market, including infrastructure projects and project finance, management strategy, team development, mergers, acquisitions. He was previously head of business development for SNC-Lavalin Colombia and was instrumental in growing the company from two people to more than 2,000 people in Colombia. So now he is the chief executive officer and director of Chiron Life Sciences. We're talking about medicinal marijuana sold here in Colombia, sold here in Peru and so on. You'll remember the growth market. And we have, well, it's quite incredible to have Juan Carlos Echeverri Garzón. And many of you, the Colombians out there, will of course know exactly who he is. Colombian economist, former president of Ecopetrol, an oil and gas company. He has served as the 68th Minister of Finance and Public Credit of Colombia. He is the president of Econcept, a financial consulting firm in Bogota, an associate professor of economics at the University of Los Andes, visiting professor at the Instituto de Empresa Business School Madrid, Colombia's Minister of Economic Planning from 2000 to 2002, the Dean of Economics at the University of Los Andes from 2002 to 2006, appointed Finance Minister by Colombia's President-elect then, Juan Manuel Santos, in 2010. He holds a PhD in economics from New York University, BA in economics from the University of Los Andes, and he writes a weekly editorial for CNN in Espanol. So, to both of you, Alvaro and Juan Carlos, thank you so much for your time during your holidays to come and talk on the Colombia Calling podcast. If I may start with Alvaro, because of course this is about Chiron Life Sciences, tell us a little bit, Alvaro, about the success stories since we last talked, because really Chiron Life Sciences has been, well, scaling the heights in this field. Tell us a little bit about what's been going on?
Well, first of all, thank you, Richard, for having me again. Last conversation was very interesting, and always happy to be here. And to Juan Carlos, always a pleasure to see him, and very grateful and very proud to have him in our board. So, yeah, well, you know, Richard, it's been, as I said before, this year, we started a dichotomy year. You know, it's been a very tough year for Colombia, for Latin America, but nevertheless, I think the company achieved a lot, particularly the last 3 months. And I will start with medical cannabis. You know, we became the first company in Colombia to start selling medical cannabis, let's say back in March, last week of March. And we are seeing tremendous growth in medical cannabis in Colombia since we started. As you may recall, we have our own network of clinics that's called Serenia, which is the biggest platform that we have for medical cannabis. I would say, you know, until the end of the year, we've written more than 7,500 prescriptions in the last, 8 months, growing, let's call it 25-30% per month. And, you know, that being a lot of attributed to the fact that we focus so much on that education, educating doctors, bringing medical cannabis to the forefront, developing strategies to show patients and doctors that this is a viable product, that, you know, we are seeing a lot of people that have experienced the benefits of medical cannabis for the last 7 months, and that gets us, well, that's very exciting for us. Just recently in December, we were able to get the government of Colombia to cover medical cannabis in Colombia. So now today, even CBD or THC is covered by the medical system in Colombia. We have to continue working to make sure that those processes are a lot smoother. But that also means that, you know, for patients who see the need for this, they now are able to get it at a very low cost because the government of Colombia is covering. I think that's one of the biggest news, not only for the company, but for the industry worldwide, because there's very few countries in the world, let's say Germany, maybe Israel, Colombia, that have a program to cover medical cannabis. And the fact that the government did it so fast, I think it shows that, you know, there's strong belief in the medication and in this industry. You know, we've been doing a lot of things in Colombia. We recently expanded our clinic network. We opened a new clinic in Medellin on December 11th, small format clinic, which we want to expand significantly for 2021. And the idea of doing that is so that we can take that learning experience that we've had, take it to other cities where we can show patients, now that it is going to be covered, that the opportunity to use medical cannabis to treat some of the conditions and start getting away from all this opiate medication, you know, that's so damaging. It's been a success, I guess. We've written more than 100 prescriptions in 3 weeks, which is very significant considering that this is small format type of clinics. We're looking very much forward to expanding this in other cities in Colombia, and also taking this model of that vertical integration with the clinics abroad, in Mexico, Colombia, Peru, Brazil. Those are part of the plans for next year. It's also very exciting for us because, as I said, as tough as this has been, we also became the first company to export high THC products out of Colombia ever, and that we started doing that in Peru. We started having our first patients with THC and one-to-one in December of last year in Lima. And you know, I think it's very interesting because, you know, Peru is an interesting market. People know a lot of cannabis a little bit more than Colombia. The fact that we were able to do it, go through all these regulations, logistics issues, training doctors, gets us very excited. We also start prescribing cannabis in the UK. Also, you know, after we spoke in October, and we have a very big program to start continuing servicing patients in the UK and hopefully growing this year towards Brazil and Germany and looking forward to Mexico. So, you know, when we start having all these patients that are growing, we start looking also at the evidence. And it's very exciting because, you know, we always talk about medical cannabis and we talk about third-party information, how this medication works. But today, you know, we're looking at the patients that we service. We see that 92% of the patients that we service are experiencing a significant improvement in their primary condition after 3 months. And when you can talk about a medication that has that level of efficacy and efficiency, for real, with actual patients that are taking the medication, I think it means that not only does this work, but, you know, it's just a matter of time until more patients, more doctors start to believe in this evidence. And you know, it certainly shows that there's a tremendous growth opportunity for the company, for the country, and for the industry in whole. Like, 2021, last year, we saw a lot more countries opening up medical cannabis, you know, Panama, Mexico, Ecuador, Argentina. So it just starts to show you, even in the middle of this pandemic, how everybody's thinking about the future of medicine. And you know, we want to be leaders in that. And you know, how do we strengthen our company so that we can execute more? We raised some capital back in November, which was great for us as well. You know, we were lucky enough to be able to get somebody like Juan Carlos in our board, and that starts to show that, you know, we are going in the right direction. As much as this is so tough, but you know, we implemented telehealth solutions so that we can have more patients being able to access cannabis in a safe way without leaving their homes. And all these things that we've been able to achieve in the last 3 months just today puts us in a different path of continued growth and being able to service patients. And, you know, I could spend hours talking about all these stories, but you start listening to stories of patients from all ages who have been benefiting because of our product, because of the way that we treat patients. And, you know, we created this company to do good. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we forget about doing good, right? Because we focus so much on the capitalistic aspects of our business. But when you're actually improving quality of life and you are seeing patients' results and you see more doctors believing this, it gets us very excited. So I think this year, even with pandemic and things like that, but we do see a light at the end of the tunnel, no? But you know, patients are paying more attention to this, and you know, we're going to be opening up more clinics as well. And we are seeing that Medellin has been working great. And you know, I think this speaks to the testament of, you know, our focus is on the customer and the patient. And the more we focus on that, the more we're seeing those results. So it's been a great year, despite, you know, the dichotomy of.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you for that update. It does sound like a tremendous growth year for you, Alvaro, with Chiron Life Sciences. And of course, as you said, Juan Carlos Echeverri has joined the board of directors. And this, obviously, his name and experience offers a gravitas, you know, a real serious, I would say, reputation to the firm. So let me welcome Juan Carlos onto the show here and maybe to give us a little bit of an intervention. First and foremost, well, thank you for coming on. Why and how did you get involved with Chiron Life Sciences? Let's get your belief and feeling towards this company.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Alvaro, for the invitation to talk to your audience. Happy New Year. After the events of yesterday in Washington, we have a fresh beginning for the whole world. So I think we're all happier today. And also for finishing 2020, 2021 should be a better year in many respects. in more than one. For me, actually, the invitation that I received from Alvaro and from the other members of the board of directors honored me. They called me at the end of last year, and I was acquainted with the experience of Karen, but then I got an in-depth introduction to what Karen is achieving and the very amazing and very ambitious plans, mm-hmm. International and in the scientific area, the medical treatment, the clinics. I think it's an amazing business model. The reason why I think they thought of my name is because like 1 year ago, we wrote I lead an economic consultancy, a concept, as you said at the beginning. And we wrote a piece, a long study actually, on the prospects of cannabis and medicinal cannabis in Colombia and the industry that could represent. And the idea was this, it's very hard to create a miracle, an economic miracle, let's say like flowers in Colombia or wine in Chile or salmon or soybeans in Brazil or avocados in Mexico. I mean, this is agribusiness is always complicated. It's very demanding. It demands a lot of science and a lot of logistics. And Latin American countries are very good at producing, but are not that good at packing and selling and putting the product in the world markets. We have advanced very, very much in the last 20, 30 years, many countries. I just presented some examples. And definitely when medicinal cannabis and cannabis in general came about as a promising industry some years ago, we thought Colombia, this is an amazing opportunity for Colombia. So we wrote this study showing that this can be one of these seldom to see miracles in our countries, especially for us. So we presented a case for a potential export market of up to $7 billion. Recall that Colombia's flower exports are like 1.5 billion. Coffee exports are between 1.5 by 2 or 2.5, depending on the price. So creating a market that could reach, of course, with many, many caveats, but that could reach, let's say, $5 to $7 billion a year on export revenues is something that you have to look very carefully. And the government of Juan Manuel Santos, the previous government in which I worked as Minister of Finance, as head of a control, promoted this industry, and the healthcare minister promoted this the new regulation. But we needed, of course, entrepreneurs and entrepreneurial base to exploit this opportunity. And I think Karen is a forerunner, is a pioneer in many respects. So I think that's the reason. I don't see any other than I started the industry, and that they are the pioneers. And I was lucky enough to get the call. So here I am, and I'm very happy and very proud.
Well, I mean, that they approached you and you said, yes, this is I think it's a win-win situation there indeed. And of course, for both of you then, talking about this, is still to this day, there will be a stigma in Colombia surrounding, let's say, things that come from what is perceived to be an illicit drug. So I think perhaps your name attached to it is obviously stepping forwards and pushing that stigma a little bit to one side. And let's talk about this business in Colombia, because there is so much debate around unemployment at the moment. Alvaro, I have to start with you. It's like the company has grown and grown and grown. You have your providers, you have things. What kind of figures do you have now for the size of the company? Because we need jobs in Colombia. I mean, we need people to formalize, and we need people to sign up and have, let's say, even careers. Do I dare say it? Careers.
Well, Richard, I think one of the interesting things about cannabis for us, the way our approach is that right now we have more about 350 employees of all types of professions, from growers, who are working on the field cultivating cannabis, all the way to PhDs and doctors and nurses, because of our model of vertical integration. So when we talk about creating jobs, we have to think about this is not just on the agriculture side. This also has to be on the medical side and clinics. And then, you know, every time we open a new clinic, that creates more jobs. Every time we have expansion of our facilities, we create more jobs with the community and with third-party contractors. It's not just the direct jobs that you create, but the mm-hmm. the indirect jobs. You know? So the people who actually make the products for us, the ones that our third-party partners, the people who are providing in the clinic some of the services that we use, doctors, nurses, recent graduate doctors, people at the side from our community. We have more than 50 employees from around the area that. You know, every time that we keep growing as a company, we have more patients. That means, you know, more production. So it's interesting because I think few industries can claim that they can produce or provide so many jobs at so many different scales and not just agriculture-wise. We have to remember we started a company with only one employee, no, two employees, the two founders of the company, only 3 years ago. So, you know, and that's happening also in Europe, in Peru, in Brazil, where we're going to start soon. And in Colombia, you know, this type of, when you can create an industry that generates so many types of jobs and that you're trying to see how you are growing and give people opportunities to just, you know, move beyond their it's called regular skills and give them opportunities. Just to give you an idea, you know, we've had now 4 or 5 employees from Colombia who now are moving to other parts of the world, to Germany, to Brazil, to Mexico, and just start offering opportunities for growth of all sorts of employees. I think that's very interesting. And then, you know, coming back from that, as you say, the stigma, I think that's, and I'm sure Juan Carlos, as Colombians, I think we at least I feel that we have the responsibility to change the story. We have the responsibility to for people to look at us different, right? When I was born, you know, 42 so many years ago, and we were a different country than today, and I think we'll be a different country in 40 years as well. So I think the cannabis industry is going to do that because, you know, this is an industry being led by professionals, by entrepreneurs, by doctors. It's no longer managed by, you know, the legality market. So, you know, those jobs will keep growing. And there's many companies in Colombia in the cannabis industry who are producing and creating thousands of jobs. And that wasn't happening 3 years ago. So I think the last government made a clear decision to create an industry. This new government, you know, is now believing in that. And how do we push them forward? So it's got to be a source of job creation, but also the type of job creation that creates value. It's not just jobs that are all minimum wage. And that you have to be able to create opportunities for your employees so that they can move up, go to train other people in other countries and start, you know, creating something that creates more value for employees, for their families, and for the economy.
Excellent. Now, I understand what you were saying. You have a small format clinic in Medellin. I'm sure you have the clinic in Bogota, and you're going to expand this within Colombia, obviously. And you're exporting the THC and CBD medical cannabis products in Peru and other places. Every time you guys, both of you, mentioned the growth of the company, to me, what leaps out is the mentions of other countries in the region. Of course, there's the UK and Germany. Seem to be quite forward on this. But you mentioned Brazil. You mentioned Argentina, Mexico. Is this more of a south-south phenomenon? Maybe Juan Carlos can address this, because I'm seeing this a tendency now to understand that trade between people in the same continent and neighbors is beneficial. Don't always look to maybe the United States or Europe as the main markets. You know, the south-south is a positive thing, surely.
Yes, Richard. I want also to elaborate on the previous point that Alvaro mentioned and your question on the issue of reputation. Mm-hmm. Because I was born, especially I grew up and I studied in the US and in Europe, and my generation, let's say in the 80s and 90s in Europe and in the US, we spent a lot of time, every beer we drank with a friend, or somebody from school or from or from university, we spent explaining Pablo Escobar and explaining drugs in Colombia, explaining crime, etc. And I tell you the truth, back then I thought that our stigma would stay with us forever. And Colombia has been, through a lot of effort and a lot of suffering, able to modify slowly but surely, you know, along the last 20 years, modify that stereotype. Of course, it's still some of it is still there, but I think this industry will show that. I have been when I started studying the cannabis industry, I had this second thought: is this really good for Colombia or not? And then you consider what cannabis have, exactly what Chiron, for example, represents. You have a plantation in which you involve not only a lot of people and a lot of people in the countryside in places that need badly well-paid jobs. You need a scientific approach, a state-of-the-art technology. You need logistics. And then in the vertical integration of Chiron, for example, you go to the services, not only to the production, to the services part, and you include physicians and you include the clinics and the experts. So this is precisely the type of industry that can Colombia overcome that that bad stereotype of drugs is bad towards the new. I mean, I think 2021 and the this decade and probably this century will see a tidal shift in the world's understanding on this. And you see it in Canada, you see it in the US and in Europe, and of course in Latin America. Now let me address your question about whether this is a South-South phenomenon. I think Peru and Brazil, and I traveled to Thailand like 2 years ago, and in Thailand they were going very fast to develop this industry because they were afraid of the Chinese. So I think many people are thinking of this. Mm-hmm. And you probably will think, okay, this is difficult because it creates more competition. But it's precisely that competition which will first make this palatable and digestible for almost everybody in the world in 5 or 10 years' time. Mm-hmm. And that will create an amazing market worldwide of especially well-produced cannabis, both CBD or THC. And in that respect, the Latin American market, of course, creates a great opportunity, but it's not only a South-South phenomenon. I think what Alvaro has presented already to your audience is there is a possibility both in Brazil, in Mexico, in Peru, where, of course, there's the natural expansion of the Colombian producers, and Chiron in particular, is there because they are close, and we probably know the regulation and know the markets better, but also towards the, let's say, so-called north or advanced economy. So I think it can go to both markets and in both of them try to present a new Colombia, especially in this so-called, let's say, reputation loaded Latin industry, which I think is not any more reputation Latin. But we still have some issues to tackle. For example, banks still need to get used to finance these operations, etc., etc. So we have there's still room to so that regulation allows this to be a completely normal industry. But when that is reached, the sky is the limit for this industry.
Fascinating that this should be the way. And so it sounds to me, you know, the progressive company and all the opportunities that are ahead for Chiron and life sciences and people in this business, how far are we from then the medicinal and use of coca and let's say the legalization of this crop? I had to, it was a follow-on question to what you were just saying, I'm afraid.
Well, I'm afraid I'm not the right person to be Richard, but I do tell you the following. I mean, it's if you think about the cannabis industry as a whole, mm-hmm. it starts in 1964 with 1966 with Israelis figuring out that there's an endocannabinoid system. Mm-hmm. So I just want to put it back. We're talking about 50 years mm-hmm. of research and development until that now is now becoming the scale 2020, the year which most countries are now accepting. So I don't know if these other plans will, how long that will take to be able to find those type of things. But you do have to understand that, you know, unlike these other plants, cannabis is a millenary plant. We've been using it for 8,000 years. And we've been using it forever to cure things that we're just rediscovering today. So I mean, these are questions of whatever plant, medicinal, that's a very regulatory question that's just beyond Colombia, right? It's important. Mm-hmm. That's beyond what we can do. But we need to make sure that this one, that is fully legal, that everyone is on board. You know, there's still a lot to do on this before we can try to tackle what other things could happen. So, no, I don't think that's something that, I mean, at least we are looking at particularly, or that there's a world push towards that when the world is now pushing for, hey, let's discover medical cannabis and let's see if we can make that work. The rest is, I think the question is better suited for the United Nations and downwards. Yeah, I'm here about that, so I really wouldn't know. But I just think we have to give cannabis the opportunity before we start tackling into many more things that, you know, we still really no evidence yet. So there's a lot of evidence of cannabis, and that's okay. Building.
All right. Well, I have to say, Juan Carlos, what do you say for this?
I prefer not to talk about it. It's another completely different industry. Yeah. This is the type of uses of cannabis are now in the market and in the medical industry, and that physicians can prescribe to its patients, etc., are well known, right?
Yeah.
And so that doesn't translate to other type of production of illegal drugs like cocaine, etc. So I think it doesn't carry that far, and from the Colombian point of view, is two the very very difficult very different issues. So that's why I prefer to pass.
Okay,
on this.
Very good. Well, no, that's fair. That's fair that you can pass on it. And well, I think you knew it was coming anyway. So we've only got a few more minutes here, and I'd like to take this opportunity to ask you, Juan Carlos. And so, a couple of questions as we wind down totally here. How do you see the economy for 2021 here in Colombia? How can we pull Colombia forwards once again?
Richard, the first thing is that Colombia was at a strong pace in February last year. So before COVID-19 and the pandemic hit Colombia, the economy was growing between 4 and 5, even above 4.5 probably. There was a strong business confidence. Household consumption was very strong. So there were, all the conditions for Colombia keeping at a good pace. The last recession had been 3 years ago, and it takes normally 8 years between one recession and the next. So there's a cycle of growth, and we were in the rising part of the cycle. And at that moment, there came this virus that came from the other side of the world, right? Mm-hmm. And unexpectedly hit everybody. So what we have seen the year is the what is called the V-shaped recovery. Mm-hmm. is clear there. You look at mobility to the workplace, or you look at the energy demand, or you look at consumption of credit card consumption, and all of them are just rebounding very strongly. Mm-hmm. In Colombia, probably the it helps that the economy was in good shape before. Of course, many industries, hotel industry, restaurants, all the touristic industry has suffered a lot and is still suffering, right? But many others, in manufacturing, agribusiness, services, etc. Healthcare is coming from a very hard point to recover, and it's a very important industry and commerce, right? Retail sales, etc. is 20% of GDP. In some, let's say, except from those industries that have suffered the most, and that still they don't see a reopening in the next month, or it will take probably 3 or 4 or 5 months still to recover. The rest of the economy is rebounding very well. So I we see business confidence is going in the right direction. Let's both for producers and for commerce. We see consumer confidence is going back. And so we foresee growth around 4.5% of GDP this year, which is natural because last year was very low and this year growth is just, this is the denominator and this year is the numerator. So it's a base effect. So it's natural that you get a high growth because last year was a low GDP. But apart from that, let's say, and that will happen everywhere in the world. Mm-hmm. You see the markets, you see the stock exchange in the US and the stock exchange in Colombia and the markets are doing well. So people, oil is rebounding. Oil is very important for Colombia. Oil above $45, $50 or about $40 is a very good price for Colombia nowadays, for Ecopetrol especially. So that will be a source of revenue and a source of income for Colombian families and Colombian government. There are still some issues, some challenges. For example, the fiscal deficit, public debt, not only for Colombia, everybody. The public debt in the world, Richard, in the world rose 20% in GDP terms last year. Not even the Second World War. Every country in the world, or on average, the whole world increasing 20% its total debt. That's unheard of. So that's a big issue. Public finances, fiscal deficits, public debt. But fortunately for us, it will take some 3 or 4 years for this recovery to fully, let's say, get over the COVID consequences. But we're seeing a very strong rebound. So I'm positive on Colombia. The Latin American picture is not that even. There are many different stories in Latin America, but Colombia will be one of the best ones, I think.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, thank you so much for your time. Thank you. So I'm running out of Zoom time. So thank you so much for your time. And one last question. So yes or no answer, Juan Carlos. Presidential run 2022, yes or no?
What do you mean?
There you have it, folks. The Zoom ran out. He couldn't answer. He was saved by the bell. We'll have to just wait and hear when he announces whether he's going to run or not. There's nothing more I can say. I have told him, though, via message, that he owes me a conversation the day before he decides to announce or deny that he's going to run for the presidency in 2022. So you heard it here, folks, or you didn't, or whatever you want to hear. That was a great conversation with the CEO and director of Chiron Life Sciences, Alvaro Torres, thank you again for coming on the show. And of course, economist Juan Carlos Echeverri, former Minister of Economy here in Colombia and one of the board of directors for Chiron Life Sciences as well, and a potential presidential candidate for 2022. You've been listening to the Colombia Calling podcast. I've been Richard McCall for this episode 359. Next week, my wife comes on for the first time ever, and she will basically stick the knife in for the better part of 35 minutes. But you guys asked for it, so I'm putting it out there, and Alba, my wife, will get the opportunity to humiliate me in public. So it will be a lot of fun for you listeners out there. Again, thank you to all of you who are involved in the Patreon campaign and help making us economically sustainable here at the podcast, patreon.com, Colombia Calling. And for as little as $2 a month, you can help us keep on improving and moving forwards. And finally, again, another thank you to Vincent Pollard and the team at Selva Gin. Just check them out, selvagin.com. It's London dry gin made in Colombia. So the only gin made in Colombia. Very, very aromatic with some great botanicals there as well. That's me signing off for episode 359. I'll be back next week, yes, to face the music with my wife. Thank you again, and bye-bye.